RadioInfluence.com.
We are back for another edition of the MMA Report Podcast. I am Jason Floyd. My co-host, as always, is Daniel Galvan. Daniel, how you doing today, brother?
I'm doing great, Jason. It was an awesome weekend. You had all kinds of sports from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep, man. I'm enjoying it. There's baseball on the TV screen for how many more days, we don't know. But with the constant cycle of all kinds of sports going on, I'm doing quite well, Jason. How about you, man? I know you're kicking some butt with your Awesomeo podcast for various sports. Ain't that right?
Oh, dude, I'm loving it. Man, baseball, please do not go away. Please don't go away. I've enjoyed all these shows I'm doing over at Awesomeo.com, along with the MMA shows, doing MLB shows, did a NASCAR show, and going to be doing some NBA coverage here. I'm definitely more of an NBA person, so as we record this show, the Nets and Bucks are coming down to the wire here. So, but yeah, pretty much every night I'm watching NBA. That's my go-to sport. But watching, you know, usually it's me sitting on the couch, NBA on the TV, and then I have my laptop next to me, and I got about four MLB games going. So yeah, it's it's really interesting. You know, I think as we've seen how sports has continued in pandemic, you know, obviously we've seen how the UFC has done it, and you know, now you're seeing how, you know, the various other leagues are now doing with what we've seen with the NBA and MLS and NASCAR and all these other leagues. NHL now is back up, so it's at the end of the day, it's just great to be able to sit there and, you know, sit on the couch on, you know, any given night and watch sports. And of course, in terms of MMA, we've got a busy weekend coming up. We've got Friday, we got Bellator 243, Benson Henderson versus Michael Chandler, the rematch, the main event of that fight card. And then, of course, on Saturday, we got the UFC Fight Night card in Vegas, headlined by Derek Brunson and Alexei Oleinik. We're going to preview that fight card here later on in the show. Also, talk about some news items, do a little buy or sell on some things that have happened over the past couple of days. But, Daniel, let's kick off by talking about what happened last weekend at UFC Vegas number 5. And, you know, Dana White, I think he kind of summed it up the best you could after the fight card was over last Saturday night of it was a crazy 48 hours for the UFC.
Yeah, man, it was an absolute crazy 48 hours with all the canceled fights. I mean, for me, the biggest fighter that I missed was definitely the new signing, Timur Valiyev. I mean, he was the guy that I really wanted to see compete, and I'm sure we'll see him quite soon in the UFC, but there was so many canceled fights. Fortunately, you didn't have, you know, the main event impacted. You didn't have Calderwood and Maya impacted, and Luque and Brown and Green and Vanetta. So you still had a lot of the main entree. And even though they did lose several fights and you feel for those fighters, I got to be honest, from a selfish standpoint, coming off of a 15-fight card, this 8-fight card, man, was just nice and easy. So I kind of enjoyed the fact that we had a very, very, very thin card just because it was an easy viewing, especially as we ease into a two-event week this week.
Yeah, you know, you look at the fights they lost on, you know, weigh-in day, and then losing two fights on fight day with Gerald Meerschaert testing positive for COVID-19. So his fight against Ed Herman is off. And then Kevin Holland loses his fight against Trevin Giles. You know, just kind of on those two situations, first off, on the Gerald Meerschaert situation, and look, I am no coronavirus COVID-19 expert at all. But like when I'm literally live on air as all this is going down. I mean, like, there's people in the YouTube chat are like, hey, by the way, is Meerschaert out? And then, you know, of course, at that point, you start kind of scrambling on some things. And, you know, I guess like my first thought on that is just like, what happened to where he was negative all week and then the weigh-in test comes back positive? Is it a false positive? I don't know. These are things that kind of, like, you sit there, and of course, you know, we've seen with, you know, the Miami Marlins situation and some other situation at MLB, it's like, I guess if you're the UFC, I wonder how many questions they had for Gerald Meerschaert and his team of what they had been doing.
Yeah, certainly. And I'm sure Gerald probably has questions about the positive himself. As you mentioned, there's certainly the possibility of a false positive. We've seen that. I saw that not too long ago on a boxing card. There was a prominent female fighter. Her name escapes me, but she had a false positive and that canceled her fight. So for Mershot, I don't think, you know, and we've seen it in other leagues, but I don't think Gerald's out there going to a strip club, you know, like he's a major league baseball player when it's fight week. You know, he's probably too damn worried about making the weight cut. So for that positive, if he does in fact have COVID, I gotta think it's just a matter of getting it, and then it just took a while to actually show up. I think there is an incubation period, and potentially that wouldn't have shown up on the original test. But again, I am no COVID expert. I'll give Gerald the benefit of the doubt. I on the other side, like, I feel so bad for Ed Herman. Who, I mean, the story broke that basically he was paid $10,000. He wasn't even paid his show money, which for a fighter that's been in the UFC as long as he has, literally since like the mid 2000s, that show money is pretty damn big. So to only get $10,000, I actually feel incredibly bad for Ed Herman.
Yeah, this was the tweet on Monday from Stephen Morocco. His initial tweet says, hearing that Ed Herman received $10,000 for his canceled fight at UFC Vegas 5, last disclosed purse for him was $54,000, though he had a higher with recent wins and new deal. And then he says, further clarification, offered $10,000. And the more I've thought about that situation, Daniel, was like, at some point, fighters, like, you got to fight for yourself, man. Like, this is it's I feel so bad for Ed Herman because he did nothing wrong here. He did everything he was supposed to do. You know, Dana White did joke after the fight was over, go, you know, there's a reason. So, you know, after the whole Trevin Giles, you know, being pulled from the fight, they wanted to make Kevin Holland versus Ed Herman. And, you know, and basically, you know, Dana goes, well, his nickname is Short Fuse. And it basically sounds like he had already left the bubble and apparently must have been enjoying a time in Vegas and maybe trying to get on a flight back home. But it's just one of those things, like, the guy does everything he's supposed to do. It's not his fault that his opponent is unable to make it to the fight. And he can't get at least a show purse?
Yeah. You got to think the money obviously was budgeted out anyway. And it's like the UFC should not be pinching pennies. They are making a lot of money. And I feel like, you know, a lot of the financial constraints, if there are any, has more to do with Endeavor more so than the UFC. The UFC is kind of like the golden child of that group. And I just think the UFC during COVID, they need to be paying show money for fighters that do everything right. And even though, to me, the excuse of, oh, we're just going to rebook them really quickly isn't good enough. Just because being a professional fighter, you know, the job isn't fight day. The job that you are performing is getting to fight day.
I'm going to mention this, Daniel, and this goes out to MMA reporters. Stop comparing what the UFC is doing coronavirus test related to other sports leagues. Because, Daniel, you know what the difference is.
What's that?
Those other sports leagues have the collective bargaining agreement the UFC is a dictator when it comes to this stuff. So, like, when I see, like, people who report on this sport, you know, compared what the UFC is doing to other sports leagues, I'm like, there's a major difference. And the fact of you're not expressing what that major difference is, like, come on, man. Come on. You got to let it know that this is a dictatorship. And, like, you see everything that happened last weekend. You look at the Ed Herman situation. You look at the Eric Spicely situation. And I don't know how any fighter can sit there and truly believe the UFC has got our back.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's the big time difference is the lack of leverage fighters have as a group compared to other sports, without a doubt. I mean, the only fighters that have leverage are the difference makers, the ones who live in mansions and can pay off, you know, to buy 3 new Teslas. Those guys have the leverage. The fighters don't. The Eric Spicely situation was one that, you know, at first I was like, all right, Eric, he misses weight by a lot. And then he gets cut. His most recent fight was a loss. Granted, it was a fight of the night against Darren Wynn. My original thought was it kind of, I mean, he did miss weight by a lot, but then you read about him talking about the fact that he was on antidepressants after suffering the concussion from Wynn, and that likely impacted his ability to cut weight. This is a guy with a pretty damn good track record, and you feel for him. And my general thought process goes to criticizing the UFC just because I feel like they can take care of the fighters. They don't have to. That's why they didn't. But it's just an unfortunate situation of they are hurting their reputation, and it won't in the end mean anything. This is a minor side note for the UFC, but to me, to win the little battle, to keep your lower level fighters happy, I mean, that's how I think an organization should go about running itself, especially when it can afford to.
You know, it's just when initially you start seeing all these stories about what Eric Spicely had said, and it was there was a great piece on MMA Fighting written by Steve Morocco where you talk to Eric Spicely about it. I think like I look at it and I say, if you are a non-MMA fan and you just see a tweet of a fighter saying that he's on antidepressants due to a concussion, like I go, what does that person think of the mixed martial arts community?
It's a major negative story, and it really, really puts a microscope on top of the ugly nature of this sport. It puts a microscope, again, on the ugly lack of leverage that fighters do have. You go to a normal job and you get a concussion on it, chances are that employer is going to see you through whatever that is, and that's not the case here. It's a bad story because that could potentially be a long-term deal, and it's been a major deal to use antidepressants for a long period of time. It is really rough and dark stuff in a sport, by the way, that has got to be so mentally challenging even without a damn concussion. There is so much pressure and the sport is so darn violent, and it's one of the few jobs, you know, sports are one of the few jobs where you can go in there and clearly know you lost. You know, you go in there, you work at McDonald's, there isn't a win or a loss every single day, but you go and you lose, your hopes and dreams evaporate. It's a tough sport mentally. And when you look at the Eric Spicy situation, it's definitely just a major negative. And it's a bit different than, again, if we are comparing the UFC to the NBA, to Major League Major League Baseball is a bad comparison. They have bad PR right now. But the reputation certainly isn't strengthened when these stories come out. In fact, it's weakened.
Fighters had their leverage, and they didn't take advantage of it. They had their leverage right when the UFC wanted to be the first sports league to come back, and they just didn't take advantage of it. And I just hope that fighters look at everything that's happened over last week with this event and just say, man, this isn't right. It's not right that a guy that was supposed to fight for his last disclosure purse was $54,000 and he's offered $10,000 because he ultimately didn't fight. I look at that, I just hope that fighters take a lesson from that. And it just, you know, we always have this conversation, at what point are the fighters going to unite together? And it probably never happens, but it's another sign where I sit there and go, you should never think that the UFC is fighters first. It's business first, no question about it. You know, a mention about Trevin Giles fainting right before his fight, very scary scene. And to see, I was reading the ESPN article about his Instagram video from Monday where he's talking about irregularities in his heart. And, you know, all I can think about, Daniel, is if you're the Nevada State Athletic Commission, are you looking at yourself going, did our doctors miss something?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you got to. I mean, it was a bad showing in general by doctors in Nevada. We'll get to the main event later. But certainly, that's something you got to look at, and that's a scary deal. I mean, a heart issues is just, when you look at heart issues in the history of sports, I mean, that to me is one of the deadlier things. I mean, you saw often in the 90s and quite a couple times high profile incidents in basketball where player died due to that. And that to me is just a priority that athletic commissions need to watch out for. I mean, that's one of the great values of an athletic commission is to protect the fighter from themselves. And so certainly they missed that. I mean, we had Trevin fainting, Calderwood fainting afterwards. That's not related to heart issues, but for Trevin, I mean, that's a scary deal. And you feel for him, you know, he's just so young in his career, 5-6 fights in the UFC, 27 years old. He's invested so much time. And now for him, a heart issue is a very, very scary thing. Anytime you deal with something like that, whether it be your heart, your brain, stuff like that. I mean, look at the former middleweight champion in Bellator. You know, all of a sudden, he goes from being on top of the world, and then you have, you know, Rafael Carvalho no longer competing. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, I mean, by the way, you mentioned about JoJo Calderwood, and you know, it kind of makes you wonder, you know, and I don't know if I said it on this podcast. I know that I said it on my show on Awesomos of, you know, your 10th and MMA gods here, JoJo. And, you know, she didn't get the win. It makes you wonder, will she ever get back, you know, to that title fight that she already had? And obviously she chose to fight, which, you know, leads you to the question of, you know, of the decision by her, her coach and fiance, John Wood, and her manager, Danny Rubenstein, to elect to take that fight as opposed to just sit back and wait for Valentina Shevchenko. And of course, you know, right after the fight's over, Valentina tweets about, you know, basically Jennifer Maia being next. But like, this is my question. Should Jennifer Maia be next for a title shot? I mean, Daniel, she is 3-2 in the UFC. She lost her debut to Liz Carmouche. She then gets back-to-back wins against Alexis Davis and Roxanne Modafferi. Decision loss against Caitlin Chookagian. Now the win against Joanne Calderwood. But let's not forget the two fights previous to her fight against JoJo Calderwood, she missed weight. So if I'm the UFC, I don't know if Jennifer Maia is this shoe-in for the title fight, but I think the problem the UFC has right now is you don't really have a clear-cut number one contender.
Yeah, I mean, Calderwood, who was scheduled to face Shevchenko, I mean, she was getting that fight on a one-fight win streak, not much of a streak. And I think that was the big reason why you saw Calderwood go out there and compete in this fight, because she risked a lot and she lost it all. And I think one of those big reasons was that the flyweight title shot for JoJo wasn't guaranteed. And this flyweight division, because Shevchenko has done such a great job of clearing it out, and there really isn't a whole lot of fighters that have established themselves, there aren't too many great contenders. I mean, Cynthia Calvillo is a name that sticks out to me as a fighter who, you know, I'm excited one day to see her challenge against Shevchenko. But for Maia, even though her resume isn't very impressive, it's a matter of, for the job application, everybody else who's sending in a resume, it's not too impressive either. And for Jennifer, this individual performance was the best one of her career. It was high profile. She took on a fighter, JoJo, who was booked to contend for the title. Maia comes in as an underdog. What does she do? She outstrikes Calderwood. She gets taken down, and she immediately is able to attempt submissions and then get the quick first round tap. This was a very authoritative and clear win, and you also had the champ calling her out. So you have a pathway to the title fight, but it's going to be a long time. There just isn't much on the horizon where I don't think we will sit down and get excited for a Valentina Shevchenko flyweight championship fight for a year or two. It's going to take a while for a contender to really, really break out in the same way, you know, someone like Justin Gaethje did for the lightweight championship.
Yeah, it's be interesting to see. But of course, the main event, Derek Brunson gets a win against Edmund Shahbazyan. And, you know, look, clearly did not see the fight going that way. Great performance by Derek Brunson. I think that's probably the best Derek Brunson we have seen in the octagon. And we've seen, you know, Derek Brunson in the octagon for a long time, making his UFC debut all the way back in 2012. When it comes to the end of the fight, I thought Herb Dean did a great job in stopping the fight. I think to me, it seems like Herb wanted the corner to stopped the fight at the end of the second round, almost to a point of I think he was trying to get the doctor to say to stop the fight. It was very clear that Edmund Shahbazyan was done after the second round. And it's just, once again, it's just another example in this sport where a fighter is done, but the corner continues to send him out.
Yeah, it's just not ingrained in these corners to protect their fighters. It's just ingrained to fight, 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 fight. You know, be Rocky Balboa. And you can't be Rocky Balboa if you're on Dream Street. I mean, it's a failure on the corner. It's a failure on the doctor. You know, in round two, when Brunson's on top of him, landing that vicious ground and pound, I mean, that fight was 10 seconds away from being stopped. Maybe 5 seconds away. He was saved by the bell. I mean, Brunson was landing these shots that were like twofers, where he would land a big punch, that would do impact, and Edmund's head would hit the ground, and that would do impact. It was like, bong, 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 bong. So, you know, 10 seconds, that fight's over. Well, maybe, I mean, Herb Dean was the referee, so it probably would have taken an act of God and three lightning bolts in 40 more minutes for Herb to step in there. It was a awkward situation for Herb Dean, who was obviously a big part of the conversation last week. So for him, again, I wouldn't criticize him really in this fight, but, he found himself in a very, very, the biggest takeaway from this fight card, unfortunately, probably wasn't Derek Brunson, shutting the gate on Edmund Shahbazyan. It was the unfortunate way when this fight ended, where Brunson clearly finished him by the end of the round. But I mean, all the credit to Derek, man. Everyone was counting him out. He was set up as the quote unquote gatekeeper, and again, he shut that gate down on Edmund Shahbazyan. And he said, "Not today." He wants his own middleweight championship run. And Derek has flashed big time potential. I mean, his biggest run was when he was just reeling off knockouts against really solid middleweights, and those runs were stifled against future middleweight champions in Whitaker and Adesanya. So for Brunson, you feel good for him in that this is a fighter who's competing for a very long time. People have started to count him out and write him off as just a gatekeeper, and he's shown, especially since he's made that jump to Sanford MMA with Henry Hooft, that he's evolved his game. And for Edmund, I mean, he had a good first round with the striking, but just the inability to defend the takedown, the inability to defend the strikes on the ground, he got himself hurt in a bad way. He still has a world of potential. The fact that he's only 22 years old is amazing. But unfortunately for Derek, even when he wins in impressive fashion, the biggest takeaway from the fight isn't his talent.
And he doesn't get a performance of the night bonus. Like, come on, man.
Oh, my God. That's crazy, isn't it? Oh, my God.
Yeah, I mean, like, you just sit there and go, how does this guy not walk away with performance of the night bonus? They gave Fight of the Night to Bobby Green and Lando Vannetta, and then performance of the night, Jennifer Maia and Vicente Luque. And I saw Derek Brunson had basically a tweet like, oh, I beat the Golden Boy and I can't get a performance of the night bonus. Like, Derek, you deserve performance of the night bonus. That was a great performance. Just a great point. And, you know, on Shahbazyan, you see the talent in this kid. The kid's got, and he's so young, has so much ways he can grow, but it's one of those fights you kind of wonder, how does he bounce back?
Yeah, I think, look, this is something where it was a fight where it's going to require investment in himself inside camp. Like, it's going to require, because he has, like, you watch him and you're just like, this guy's going to challenge for a title. And he probably will one day. Again, dude is 22 years old. Dude was born in 1997. But there was glaring holes. I mean, the two big ones are what I've mentioned. When Brunson wanted the fight on the ground, he got to the ground. And when he got the fight to the ground, he did significant damage. Edmund's got to work on defending those takedowns, but if he does get taken down, he's got to specifically work on not getting hit with significant damage, because if he was able to survive, if he was able to get back up, that's where he succeeded on the feet. So Edmund, there are two big, big, big things for him to work on if he wants to be considered an elite middleweight. You get a bit concerned about, you know, the training situation for Shahbazyan, but I digress. It was a great night for a middleweight veteran in Derek, who's Don't Look Now is riding high on a 3-fight win streak. And with this victory, I mean, he set himself up to get a very relevant 185-pound fight.
I mentioned, how about him versus Jack Hermanson?
I think that's a great fight, man. I think that's a great fight. Sign me up every day of the week and twice on Sunday. I think both those guys are very, very undervalued in the middleweight division, but they're very, very close to being a middleweight championship contender. I think Hermanson Brunson, that's not the sexiest fight, but it's certainly a fight you could put as a main event.
I think it's also another example of you don't have to feel like you got to rush a prospect into these top fights. Like, you know, we see with Evan Shabazzian, you know, and now we see everyone wants to rush Chimaev into this like top five fight. I'm like, what's the rush? And I sit there and go, you know, and like Adam Martin had a thing about it, and I commented like, what's the need to rush this guy into a top 10 type fight? And, James Lynch chimed in on the conversation. He's like, you know, hey, Jason, I know you're in the bar industry. Does anybody know who this guy is? And I'm like, no. You know, I mean, he's going to have to get on a big fight. To me, if I was in the management of him, I would sit there and say, you know what? Let's sit in the gym for the next couple months. Get us on the Khabib Gaethje pay-per-view. Make us a main card fight so this kid can get some, poor people can really start to know him outside the MMA bubble. Because, I mean, like, obviously you see so much talent with them, but it's also like, let's not forget, Chimaev's wins in the UFC are against John Phillips and Ryze McKee.
Yeah, I mean, he has single-digit victories. I mean, he fought in 2018. Like, that's when he debuted. And the quality of opponents aren't great. The quality of wins, the way he won, damn impressive. But I think Edman showcases one of the big reasons why you don't do that. Granted, he kind of justified his rise. Like when you look at his win over Brad Tavares, like that was a very good win over a very good fighter. For Chimaev, I mean, it's a two-pronged deal there. It's both allow the guy to improve and take a steady approach. But what James mentioned to you is probably an even bigger one. Allow him to build a name for himself. I mean, there are few fighters that are able to go from point A to point B as a name quantity. Chimaev is working his way to it. I mean, one of the ways to do it is to get your name in the same headlines as Conor McGregor, and he's done just that. But it's a rare, rare fighter like Sean O'Malley that is able to make that catapult into stardom. And obviously, Chimaev has not done that.
Yeah, but I mean, look, kid's got super talent. There's no question about it. But also, we should kind of mention about Frankie Science, the post that he put on Facebook. Of course, lost to Jonathan Martinez. Jonathan did not make weight, missed weight by 4.5 pounds. I actually spoke to Jonathan a little prior to recording this podcast. That interview will be up on themareport.com and also on the MMA Report YouTube channel. And, look, he's Jonathan's not making any mistakes. He's not making excuses for being unable to make weight. He's not making any excuses at all. He just basically said, look, it's never going to happen again. But, you know, Frankie Science had this, you know, long Facebook post, but I pulled the part of the Facebook post that I found the most interesting where he said, quote, "This time I feel I need to speak my mind. There's something to be said when your opponent doesn't respect the game enough to put in the work up front and you're told to take the fight anyway. It put me in a tough position. Fight or be cut. I'm not okay with that." And I guess Daniel kind of goes back to the conversation we were having a little bit earlier with the pay aspect of the fighters who, you know, their opponent couldn't make it the fight night. Like, you see this from Frankie Saenz and going, if what he is saying is true and the UFC told him either take the fight or you're cut, that is some BS. I almost said it, Daniel.
It is BS, man. It is absolutely BS because this is his livelihood. I mean, Frankie Saenz is 39 years old. He is not a spring chicken in the sport, and he's been around a while. He's learned discipline and when to say no, and he probably wanted to say no, but to not have the opportunity to say no when you're a 135-pounder and the guy you're fighting misses weight by 5 pounds or so. You know, the catch weight was 140 and a half. To not have the ability to decline that fight is messed up. because that's a proposition where Martinez has a pretty damn good advantage. I mean, I'm sure Frankie would have loved to have gotten the prep and the heads up that he could show up at 140, but he did not. He made weight, and you feel for him. And that's that to me, out of all the things that we've seen here, if I was going to power rank the most messed up things that the UFC did with this fight card, I would definitely say giving signs an ultimatum. If that's what they did, that's kind of what he alluded to, essentially. If that's what they did, I mean, that's the most messed up of them all, because he's a great fighter, but he's a vulnerable fighter in that he's not on a run at all. He's not a fixture in the division, and he's absolutely interchangeable. And for him, a loss is devastating, and that's what happened here. It was a great fight, but he still found himself getting finished with a knee in the third round.
Yeah, it's one of these things where it would be interesting to know of when the science camp was made aware that Martinez was not going to make weight, and of course, obviously, you start the negotiation for, you know, this fight taking place at a, you know, a contract weight bout is, you know, hey, once you get to, you know, okay, here's my percentage. I wonder, did Frankie's team say, okay, but you got to weigh in on fight day and you can't be weighing more than this? Like, to me, if I was representing Frankie Saenz, that's the demand I would have made.
Yeah, I think along with getting as much money in your purse, I mean, that's a major demand here. I mean, because who knows, that could have played a role in the finish. I mean, honestly, I don't think so. Like, Jonathan Martinez looked damn good in this fight. Like, but still, to at least hold him to that, to at least not just put all the weight back on, is one of those deals where that should probably be commonplace whenever you have a fighter miss weight. And that type of infrastructure should be in place, and that should just be routine. But overall, I mean, that fight itself was really good. And it's a shame Martinez missed weight. Hopefully he doesn't do it again, because when you look at what he brings as a fighter, it's some exciting stuff in this division. I mean, in particular for him, he is just magical with his foot, bro. Like, the different head kicks he was throwing at signs throughout this fight was something where it's like, I would pay money to continue to watch this guy fight.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and for Jonathan Martinez, I mean, you know, obviously he had the controversial decision loss back in February. You know, he's, you know, so it's officially a loss, but, you know, he has won, you know, three of his last four. So interesting to see what happens here. As I mentioned, I talked to him. Also talked to Chris Gutierrez, who had the draw against Cody Durden. And Daniel, here's about the best way I would sum up my conversation with Chris Gutierrez is basically he doesn't understand why the first round was scored a 10-8 round. That's about the best way I can sum up the interview.
Wow. I mean, look, it was Cody Durden went out there. He took him down and he dominated the round. I don't know what to tell Chris Gutierrez. I mean, he landed ground strikes. He went for the choke. It was all Durden. It wasn't like the most authoritative 10-8 round, but I see that. And for Chris, I mean, look, he rebounded well in 2 and 3, but a draw is a bitter pill to swallow. It's crazy. I saw MMA Decisions put it out there that this was the first unanimous draw in UFC history without a point deduction, I think is what they said, which is insane, actually, when you think about it, that we had that. It took this long to have a clean, unanimous draw.
Yeah, that was an amazing note that they put out there on Saturday. But of course, you know, Daniel, the action continues this week. The UFC will be continuing their show in Las Vegas. We got UFC Vegas 6, and of course on Friday we got Bellator 243. What main event intrigues you more, Bellator or the UFC? Of course, Bellator, we got Henderson and Chandler, the rematch, and then of course UFC is Olenek versus the Black Beast.
Oh, dude, without a doubt, Bellator's main event. Like, look, I love me Derek Lewis. I do. He's got a great Instagram. The post-fight interview is worth the price of admission. And occasionally, he's pretty damn exciting. But Lewis and Olenek is a fine heavyweight match. Chandler Henderson's a pretty dang good and interesting lightweight contest. I mean, both these guys are two of the top non-UFC lightweights in the whole sport. Chandler's held that role for a very, very long time. And you know, the biggest question that makes this fight the most riveting is all that's on the line for Michael Chandler. This is the last fight on his Bellator deal. You'll be hearing about that everywhere except for the Bellator broadcast. And I think that that factoid makes that this fight that much more compelling, because even though Michael Chandler has enough goodwill and enough reputation to fight anywhere coming off a win or a loss, I think with the win, he just has that much more leverage that could really add some more money to his bank account in his immediate future.
Yeah, so Bellator is doing a virtual media day on Wednesday. So 9 fighters are taking part in this. It's all going to start at 1:30 p.m. each time with Benson Henderson. Michael Chandler is at 2:45. So it'll be interesting to see how many questions are contract related. Like, if I told you Michael Chandler gets asked 10 questions, how many of them are related to his contract / free agency?
It's got to be a majority of them, man. It's the most interesting thing about it. It is, man. You're talking about a guy who's a part of the Bellator Mount Rushmore on his way out. It's a huge story. Chandler's been just a foundational piece for Bellator, along with Eddie Alvarez. I mean, the fight with Alvarez is still the best fight in Bellator history. Him and Patricio and Alvarez, I mean, those are the guys that have really been just the identity of Bellator, and Bellator's at risk of losing another one. So, I mean, that's the prevailing point. I mean, for Chandler, it's just like for him, I think the one competitive thing that would keep him to Bellator, and I don't think it's strong enough, but it would be avenging the loss to Patricio Pitbull. But that's the one fight. But in order for him to get that fight, he's going to have to sign a much bigger deal. So, look, it's the prevailing narrative. And I just think that for Michael Chandler, I mean, he's been a Bellator for a very, very long time. It's so exciting to see him make his way to a UFC cage.
I truly believe this is the last fight in Bellator for Michael Chandler. That's just my opinion. And the reason I believe that is Michael Chandler is 34 years old. He has accomplished everything he can accomplish in Bellator. And knowing how much of a competitor that this guy is, you have to imagine that the thing that's left on his bucket list is to prove that he is the best 155 pounder in the world. And this is not trying to be a knock on Bellator. This is just being honest. Michael Chandler cannot prove he's the best 155 pound fighter right now and fight in the Bellator cage. For him to prove that, he's going to go over to the UFC. I don't see Bellator overpaying for him. So I truly believe that ultimately his days in Bellator are likely up after this fight is over. I will tell you, in terms of this fight, I wish this fight was a 5-round fight. I have a feeling that I do feel this is going to go all 15 minutes. And I feel like at the end of the 15 minutes, we're going to go, man, I wish there was another 10 more minutes left in this fight.
Yeah, I think so. I think Michael Chandler is going to push the pace big time. And it's probably a good thing for him that this isn't going into championship rounds, because I feel like at times when he pushes that pace, that can be very, very tiring. And he's going to have the green light to go full force, full throttle from the get-go, whether it be with the – and I think it's probably going to be more so the wrestling from Chandler than anything else against Benson. It's just like I feel like it's the safer avenue to a win. We saw that in their initial fight, that he was able to have success with slamming him down. And I just think that's what we're going to see here. I would be surprised if we see a finish here. I think it's going to be close. I mean, Benson has really, really done well lately. He's shown, you know, not, you know, complete old self, but shades of his old self. I wish this was a 25-minute fight for sure. I agree with what you're saying about the one way Bellator keeps him is by overpaying him, by telling him, bro, we're going to get you in all the Dave and Buster's commercials. But I just, I think Chandler comes out here. I think he gets the victory over Henderson. I think he says sayonara to Bellator. It's been a great 10-year run with the promotion. He's been with the promotion since he was 3-0. I think for a combat sports athlete, the UFC's the ultimate goal from the first time you step in a gym. And for Chandler, when you see a guy who made the jump like Justin Gaethje, and he's been real successful with that, I think he's looking at the Gaethje Nurmagomedov fight, and you got to think the thought in his head is that could be me.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Benson Henderson, I feel like it's a very quiet four-fight winning streak that he has been on since starting 1-3 in Bellator. Of course, those losses were two split decision losses, one to Patricio Pitbull, one to Michael Chandler, which was a vacant lightweight title fight, and then, of course, losing a decision to Andrei Koreshkov when he made his Bellator debut. I just, you know, that's been the one knock on Benson Henderson is that he's a slow starter. So I absolutely agree with you. I think that Michael Chandler is going to push the pace, just kind of, sticking with Bellator here before we transition over to the UFC. When you look at this Bellator card that's going to be taking place on Friday night on the Paramount Network, by the way, main card, 10 p.m. Eastern time on the Paramount Network, also streaming on DAZN. Preliminary card will be at 6:45 p.m. Eastern time, and that fight card will be available on the Bellator YouTube channel. What is the best fight on the Bellator card, not the main event? So we got three options. You got Tim Johnson, Matt Mitrione, the co-main event, George Carhine versus Miles Jury, or Sabah Hamasi versus Curtis Millender. My pick, Daniel, would be Hamasi versus Millender. I think that's going to be a very fun fight.
I think Millender Hamasi is going to be the best fight from an action standpoint of those three. I mean, Mitrione and Johnson could be that too. I mean, you have two heavyweights going in there. Timothy Johnson, I mean, dude's got just an impeccable mustache, and he had a hell of a win over Tyro Fortune. I thought that was going to be a fight where Fortune, uses him as a platform, but Timothy said, "Heck no." So Johnson Mitrione's interesting, but I've still got to be honest and go with the Miles Jury Karakhanian fight. I just think both those guys have a long time proven themselves to be really, really talented and scrappy fighters. I think Miles Jury had a rough run recently, but I still really feel like he has unfinished business atop of this weight class, and that's why Jury Kirikani would be my pick.
I just wonder if that fight is not going to be the most fan-friendly fight.
It could be, especially if Kirikani wins it. I think Jury's a much more exciting fight than Georgie, but I mean, look, if you're going for which one's going to be a fight of the night, your Sabah Hamasi and Curtis Millender pick, I mean, that's the correct option.
Yeah, I will tell you, the preliminary card, if you're going to watch that on the Bellator YouTube channel, the names that I would pay attention to, Grant Neal, Dalton Rasta, and also Christian Edwards. Those to me would be the three fighters that, as Bellator grows them, are two fighters to pay attention to. We'll mention I talked to Mike Hamill, who's going to be taking on Adam Borks in a 150-pound matchup. It was supposed to be initially Adam Borks versus Derek Campos, and Mike stepping in the spot, trains out of the lab there with Benson Henderson, so he took the spot. I actually talked to him on Monday. You can check that interview out now on the MMAReport.com. When I was talking to him, Daniel, he was in quarantine in his hotel room as waiting for the negative test to come back.
Why are you such a hater? Why are you such a hater, man? Well, why aren't you excited for Valerie Lareda?
I think Bellator knows they have to develop her.
Yeah, that's a very nice way to put it. Look, and she may be very successful. Out of every fighter on this card, she has the best odds of popping the biggest rating for Bellator in 2021. There is no fighter on this card that has better odds than being a star in Bellator than Valerie Lareda. I will say that, but it's going to take a long road. The fights thus far haven't necessarily displayed like high level skill. But she is undefeated, so it's worth noting because she could be a huge star for Bellator. I mean, she kind of already is a star, but yeah, she does the social media well.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it, Daniel. She has maximized her marketing on social media. There is no question about it, but I think Bellator knows there's a long way to go with her in terms of before putting her in a notable fight there in the women's weight division there. But of course, on Saturday, we got UFC Vegas number 6. This entire fight card going to be on ESPN+. Of course, Derek Lewis taking on Oleksiy Oleynik. We also got Chris Weidman, a part of the main card, taking on Omari Akhmedov. Let's start there with Chris Weidman taking on Omari Akhmedov. if Chris Weidman doesn't win on Saturday night, I don't know where he goes from here.
He's got to, like, retire, in all honesty. I mean, if he loses Dokhmedov, that's 6 losses in 7 fights. Obviously, the guys he's lost to are pretty damn good, right? But it's a sad... He's very much in the same position that Alexander Gustafsson has been in, where it's just like he's trying to catch lightning in a bottle again, and it's just... It's like Cinderella, where things that have, you know, gone away. And I look, I'm going to pick Weidman in this fight. I'm just an avid Weidman fan. This is a tough fight for him against Akhmedov. I mean, Akhmedov hasn't lost in a very long time. He's all action, very exciting, and he's a tough test for Weidman. But Jason, I think if Chris loses, I think retirement is the option there, because it's kind of like, what else is there to fight for? He obviously, the ceiling is coming down on him with a loss here.
Yeah, I mean, it's a noble storyline going into Saturday night. I think Beneil Dariush versus Scott Holtzman may be our under the radar fight of the week. I think, you know, another fight I would point to is maybe a fight that people are not going to talk about, but I think that potentially, you know, after a fight card is over, it'll be the fight people are talking about. Justin James versus Gavin Tucker. I think that's got to be a really potential to be a fun fight. Of course, Kevin Holland's on this card, taking on Joaquin Buckley, who won last week on LFA, and now he's in this spot. But, you know, I mentioned about, you know, when we started talking about these fights, of like, you know, what fight, what main event intrigues you the most. While I totally agree with you, it's the Bellator main event that intrigues me the most out of these two fight cards. But if I walked into a sports bar tonight, Daniel, and people are, you know, sitting around, you know, if you happen to live in a state where people can go to a bar or a restaurant that, you know, has a bunch of TVs, and you know, they're watching NBA, they're watching MLB, and, you know, if you sat there and said, okay, I want to find 10 people who watch MMA, I have a feeling that majority, if not all, would probably say the UFC main event, primarily because of Derek Lewis.
Yeah, Derek, when him and Valley of the Radar are good at social media for very different reasons, I'll tell you that much, because they both are good at it. Derek, man, he's a guy who's been a part of some big fight cards and has made memories. I mean, I think the biggest one was, I can't even remember what the fight card was, but he was like the third fight on there, and he had the famous interview with Joe Rogan. It was probably whenever he beat Volkov, right? And he just said all kinds of craziness. Where he was gonna like go to his wife first. I can't even remember, but it was good stuff. Yeah, it was the Khabib Conor pay per view, and he took on Volkov. That was for everyone that saw that fight. I mean, that they're all in on wanting to watch Derek Lewis fight.
Yeah, but yeah, his Instagram point is his Instagram is unreal. By the way, I will tell you this, Daniel. If you've not seen his video from July the 27th. You should check it out. If you just go to his timeline, it's the one that is blurred out, so you have to actually click the video to see it. And once you watch it, Daniel, you're going to know, you know, I would just say is, when you watch it, just pay attention to the guy holding the camera.
All right. I don't want to see anyone's ding-dong as I'm loading.
No, you're not going to see that.
Okay, let's see. Clown wig, okay. Oh, my God. Oh my God, everyone go out to Derek Lewis Instagram and check out this dude in a clown wig, I believe, get murdered by a truck. I mean, that dude went so fast.
No,
that
but, dude, but if you notice, he's holding a phone like he's the camera guy.
Yeah. Oh my God. Oh my God, dude!
Oh, I must have watched that thing about 10 times, because I like, you watch it the first time, you're like, holy! And then, but then you're like, okay, all right, hold on. Then you just keep watching it over and over again. Yeah, but Derek Lewis's Instagram game on point. A lot. Yeah. Hey, if you're an MMA fighter, and I mean, like you look at it from the basketball side, Rex Chapman is like God on basketball Twitter. You know, blocker or charge. Like, and it's just, you look at Derek Lewis has done a great job of promoting himself.
Yeah, bro, this guy goes flying like he got punched by Iron Man. My favorite part is there's randomly a coffee that gets spilled, and I can't figure out whose it belongs to. But yeah, I mean, Derek does a great job promoting himself. I think looking at Derek, I think what he does so well is he just resonates with people. I think you can't help but love him. And he's starting to look pretty good, too. His most recent pictures have him looking in good shape and against Olenek.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a fight where Derek better not get caught in a submission, because that's one way he can lose his fight for damn sure. I think it's the power of Lewis against the grappling of Alexei. And I think, honestly, I'm favoring Alexei in this fight just because I feel like the difference between Alexei and Derek is we've seen a lot more consistency from Alexei Oleinik. It's just the thing with Oleinik is he's not the sexiest pick in the world.
Well, with Derek Lewis, he's got that one hitter quitter. So, I mean, I think the key for him is to keep this fight at range. You have to imagine that Olenek is going to try to close the distance, probably maybe, you know, get this fight against the fence, you know, look for like a trip takedown, single leg takedown type thing, and try to get the submission there. But yeah, this has a recipe though, Daniel. For being a not so exciting heavyweight fight.
Yeah. I think the good thing is, though, this whole fight card under it is effing good from a fight quality standpoint. Mm-hmm. Not like a fighter name value standpoint. It's a pretty weak card in terms of that. So even though this main event has the possibility of being boring and also potentially the co-main event, but not really, that's probably going to be a good one. You have a lot of like barn burner fights. You mentioned Darius Holtzman. I mean, that's my number one fight on this fight card, actually. Tim Means and Loriana Steropoli is going to be great. I think Peter Barrett is going to be an exciting fighter to watch against Yusuf Zalal, even though Zalal is the favorite there. That's a good fight to me. And, you know, Bruce Leroy's on this card. Kind of under the radar, coming off his win over Chase Hooper against Giga Chikadze. I mean, that's a damn good fight, too.
You sure about that?
I believe so. On the Wikipedia, it's on announced bouts. I Googled Bruce Leroy's name, and it did say he was announced for, let's see, August 8th on Cage Side Press and MMA Fighting. Do you think this fight's happening? You did not send me the full match lineups on our press notes.
Bro, that fight ain't happening. I was on MMA
Junkie.
How is
this fight not happening?
And I'm on UFC.com. That fight is not
what
there.
What the heck? There is an article 2 weeks ago of Alex Caceres and Giga Chikadze being announced for this event on MMA Fighting. It was obviously canceled. Oh, God. I'm so depressed. You see, you didn't even give me the safety net to give me the full fight cards. And Alex Caceres hasn't tweeted since July 2016. So I can't even look it up there. Damn it. I wonder how this fight got canceled. Because it got booked.
Yeah.
It got booked.
I'm seeing all the stories. But yeah, I was on the UFC website and also on MMA Junkie. It's not listed there. Let me go to the old Tapology machine. Tapology is really good with this stuff.
Because this is like, that's like an under the radar. Like, Bruce Leroy is a stud. Let's see. I'm looking at. Oh, the fight. It looks like the fight got rebooked to August 29th. Because I'm looking at Giga's, Giga's Twitter, and he's got this for August 29th. And it got rescheduled July 23rd. Damn it! Well, Bruce Leroy fight doesn't happen until August 29th or 23rd. 29th.
I feel like this is becoming a drinking game of will Daniel screw up a fight at some point in the podcast?
You see, here's the thing. I even like I like half ass double checked by looking at our rundown to see if you put the fight card, and then I also just Googled it and I got it confirmed by having the stories. But all I gotta say is screw you, Wikipedia.
Yeah, I was like, as you're talking about, I'm like, did I miss something?
I was so hyped to bring up the Bruce Leroy fight because you hadn't mentioned it. And I was like, oh, man, I've been seeing this one on the Wikipedia page. And no, it's not on there. You got to not never send me the matches anymore just because now I'm going to have to look at it every time. But yeah, that's a, you know, if that's a drinking game, I don't know if I if I would allow that to happen, because I'm afraid of the alcoholism that will spread.
Yeah, that's awesome. I'll be on the couch on Saturday watching these fights. Of course, on Saturday I'll be live at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time on Osmo.com, leading you up to this card. But Dan, let's talk about some other things going on in MMA. Tim Elliott and Jamal Hill are facing suspensions for positive marijuana tests at UFC on ESPN9. Yes. They're still testing for marijuana, and we'll see what happens with both those guys. Tim Elliott, I know I saw you put some stuff out on his social media, basically saying, basically asking the UFC for some help on this one of, hey, I can't be on the sideline for 9 months. We'll see what happens there. But we got some buy or sell, Daniel, on for this one. So Dana White is on Robbie from Barstool Sports podcast, and he mentions that Conor McGregor will not fight in 2020. Buy or sell, do you believe Dana White?
Oof. I buy it. I buy it, Jason. Because the reason why I buy it is I don't think Conor's fighting until there's fans in the stands. I think for some reason that's the UFC's... Like for a lot of the time, we haven't seen Conor fight because Conor doesn't want to fight, but the UFC would love to have him. But I feel like the UFC's thought process in this Conor situation is they don't want to pay out that money until they can sell a live gate. And I think that's bad calculus, because you look at the numbers for the Masvidal-Usman fight. Unbelievable numbers. I think it shows you that people, even though it's hard economic times, Dave Meltzer brought up this point and it's kind of interesting. It was this: even though it's hard economic times, people with jobs that are fortunate enough to maintain their jobs during this time probably have more spending money because they aren't out at bars and restaurants as often spending that money, mm-hmm. which could be a major reason why you saw that increase in pay-per-view buys. So I think the money is there for a huge gangbuster Conor fight, even without fans. But because there probably won't be any fans until 2021, I think we won't see Conor fight in 2020. What do you say?
Overall, I agree with everything you say there. However, what happens if, all of a sudden Conor says, I want to fight Jorge Masvidal, and he goes public with that? If you're the UFC, how do you not make the fight?
Yeah. Yeah, I get that 100%. And the thing is, that's a long time, man. That's a long time. I mean, we're in August. And the idea that we won't see Conor fight until 2021 is it's kind of insane when you know how short a fighter's shelf life is in their prime. So I think the Conor George fight is what makes sense. And even though Conor's a very rich man, and honestly, the alcohol deal he did with his I've never had it. What is it? The proof? What the hell is this alcohol called?
Proper Whiskey Number 12.
Proper Whiskey Number 12, like, that's probably making him bank, but this dude spends a lot of money, so he probably wants it. So I mean, Conor George is it. I think for him, I mean, he's probably heading in that direction, because it seems like Nurmagomedov has no interest in that Conor fight. It seems like Nurmagomedov, his game plan is simple: get you GSP and possibly retire. So Conor George, sign me up for that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it most likely we don't see Conor 2020, and you bring up a great point about the no fans. But I all it's going to take is Conor McGregor to say he wants a fight, and if you're the UFC, you're going to try to make that fight happen. Next up, buy or sell: Khabib Nurmagomedov fights George St. Pierre.
Oh, I'm going to buy it, man. I'm going to buy it. Although this is a two stipulation deal. Two things need to happen probably for this fight to happen. I think one, I think Khabib needs to beat Justin Gaethje to make that fight, because I think if Nurmagomedov loses to Justin, his next fight will be a rematch, and then he's going to be in a whole different headspace. So first off, he's got to beat Justin Gaethje. That's a tough task to do. He's my pick, but that's a tough task. The second thing is that, the UFC is gonna make that offer, and GSP's got to be down for it. And I think that's a much. I think the reason why I'm buying it happening is it seems like it is absolutely super important for Nurmagomedov to make this fight, and also that Dana White has signed off on this request from Nurmagomedov, and also it just, you know, you hear stories about George St. Pierre just still in the gym. He's just sitting and waiting for that moment. I'm buying it. I'd be interested to see what weight class this fight would take place in. I mean, it's not possible for GSP to make 155, I think. But the idea of winning three championships would be pretty damn impressive.
Look, if it's going to be a super fight, just make it like a 165-pound fight.
But yeah, but to win three championships in three weight classes, though, damn, that's enticing. But also, like, he's probably not gonna be able to make 155. Like, you know, he fought at 185 last.
No, you're spot on. I'm gonna sell it. I don't think it happens. I don't think you see GSP again. That's just my personal thought.
I don't know. I think this dude's always had his foot one foot in the door, even as he's retired time and again.
No, there's definitely that. One more buy or sell. What's more likely to be running in 2022, the PFL or the XFL?
I'm going to go with the XFL because, look, The Rock bought this for $50 million, by the way, and he bought it alongside several people, in particular Danny Garcia, who was his ex-wife, and then they became like a power couple business partner. Like, talk about having a graceful divorce. They're just taking on the world as business partners, and it's worth mentioning Danny just because, like, it seems like she's kind of gonna have more authority, I think, or that's gonna probably be her project. And it's pretty cool that you have a female owner of a sports league. But I feel like, yeah, anything The Rock touches does good, and I think the XFL actually showcased, like, the XFL would have a season next year if there wasn't a pandemic. And they may have a season next year anyway with The Rock being in it. But they had a good season, I felt like, until things got canceled. So I could see the XFL running for a long time now. And for the PFL, you know, I think they'll probably still be running in 2022. But just the whole concept of the amount of money they're paying out and how hard it is to stick around in this sport, I will actually buy more stock in the XFL just because, you know, I believe in The Rock.
I would agree with you there. I mean, I look at the PFL and I just – it more comes down to the financial side of things. I just wonder, how does the PFL make it to work, you know, in terms of when you're paying out – what they're paying out. And I mean, look, and I think a major struggle that the PFL has right now is that, you know, when you don't really have a face of the PFL. I mean, I guess your face of the PFL would be Kayla Harrison, but I think because of the pandemic, they've got a lot of pissed off fighters. And, you know, what is their roster going to look like the next time that they're able to, you know, next year where they put on a season? I would, you know, to me, it was pretty mind-blowing the fact that The Rock and his business partners only paid $15 million for the XFL. To me, that was pretty interesting. But yeah, I would agree with you. 2022, give me the XFL. I think that's got a better chance of being around than the PFL. I hope the PFL is around, but I look at it from a business side. I just don't see how it makes sense. You know, I know they're trying to, you know, they're playing the long game here and hoping everything's going to turn around. But I mean, look, when you're paying out, you know, $8 million plus just in fighters winning a tournament, I just don't know how the finances ultimately works out. I hope the PFL succeeds, but I just, you know, I think with the thing that the PFL is struggling with is they got to find a Justin Gaethje. They got to find somebody like that is going to get people to the television set.
Yeah, they do. And Kayla's a solid, solid person to have on their roster. And she's, definitely the most interesting fighter, but they need to build several of those fighters, because if you combine a Justin Gaethje type with their tournament concept, you get good fights and whatnot. I mean, it can flourish and they could very well be running for years on end. So, I mean, there's the possibility here, but when you're looking at MMA promotions that were hit the most hard by the pandemic, I think the PFL would be number one on the list among MMA promotions that are of major prominence.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, I know they've got a new new PR person in their role. Used to be with One Championship, now is with them. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Of course, a great way to support show your support for this podcast is by leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It's a great way to help myself and Dan. We appreciate any time that we do have a listener that does give us a 5-star review. Also, coming up next week, we're going to get you ready for UFC 252. Also, DraftKings is going to have a special offer for the MMA Report podcast listener next week. So you definitely want to tune into the show next week as we'll get you ready for UFC 252, which, Daniel, as we sit here right now, I'm pretty confident I know who my pick is in the main event.
Who's your okay? Well, we'll put a cap in. I'm not going to ask you now. We gotta let the viewers salivate over who it's going to be. But
I will say this, Daniel. If it was a 30-foot cage, I think my decision may be a little harder.
Wow.
I think the 25-foot cage is a big advantage to one fighter. I think it's not hard to figure out who that fighter is.
I think so too, man. I think so too.
Oh, there's something else I wanted to mention. During the broadcast on Saturday, I felt like Dominic Cruz was throwing in jabs about having to wear a mask. Maybe I'm wrong, but I just felt like he wasn't exactly the biggest fan of having to wear a mask around the Apex.
What? I guess maybe he was disappointed he couldn't smell the cigarettes and alcohol in officials. I mean, geez. Dom, stop complaining, Dom. Chill out. All right, we're doing it.
I just thought of something.
What's that?
We need to hit up Keith Peterson. Go, Keith. We want to design a shirt of you, Keith, with a cigarette in his mouth and a glass of whiskey in his hand.
That's not a bad idea. That's not a bad idea. I think that's one way to make a little money during this pandemic. Poor Keith Peterson. Has he been officiating any events since UFC 249?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he worked the event that Cruz was calling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's the only official I remember lately has been Herb Dean. It's just like, it's you never want to be the official that's on our minds, is what I would say if you're a referee.
Look, I relate it to the NFL. As an offensive lineman, no one knows your name until you screw up.
Yeah, until you get that false start or you blow that pass rush attempt and your quarterback's on the ground.
Yeah, that's basically, it's like, look, if I sat there and I went to, you know, I walked to a bar tonight, grab a beer, and someone's sitting there, standing there, whatnot, I say, hey, are you an MMA fan? They go, yeah. I go, how many MMA judges can you name?
It's got to be zero, right? Like that's a hard pull. I mean, like the most famous judges don't judge UFC anymore. I mean, Adelaide Bird and Cecil Peoples, to me, are the most, like, quote unquote famous judges.
I could. There's definitely judges I could name off the top of my head. I don't know if I'd name 10.
Oh, dude, it would take a while, because like you see the names and it's like, oh yeah, you know, seen that before. But if you were put on the spot, I mean, that's a tough deal. That's a tough Sporkle quiz for sure. I mean, that would be tough.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be interesting as our sport continues to evolve. Do we see former fighters who want to put themselves in that situation? That's why I think you got to give credit to someone like a Frank Trigg, who is doing all of the work. I mean, this guy was working amateur shows to work his way up, because in the state of California, you have to – I forget the number of amateur shows you have to work before you can actually start doing pro fights. So it'll be interesting to just kind of see as our sport evolves, will more fighters put themselves in that situation? Like an example of this. So when I was talking to Chris Gutierrez, you know, he's, you know, talking about judges. I go, would you ever, you know, cause he was talking about how, you know, he believes that, you know, we should have more former fighters as judges and referees. I said, well, is that something you want to do when your fighting days are over? And he said yes.
That's interesting that he said yes, because like I feel like we've seen some fighters make that transition, but we haven't seen as many as I would have imagined. I mean, we're already at the point where the boom period has happened and those guys are retired. I think maybe it's because those guys just love being a part of the gym as a coach or whatnot, or, you know, get away from the game, but The hope would be we would see more and more fighters follow a similar roadmap as Frank Trigg.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see, you know, kind of how that evolves. And, you know, look, I think that, you know, I mean, these commissions, you know, when I talk to them, I mean, look, they're always looking at of how do we grow the sport? You know, how you know, we've gotten to this point in, you know, 25, 30 years. How can this sport, you know, evolve each year? And there's regulars out there that are trying to do that. You know, obviously, the Kansas Commission under Adam Rohrbach, they're doing a lot of different things, you know, open scoring being one of those things that they're doing. And, you know, I know just talking to fighters are very open to that. So I think that's going to be interesting to kind of see what happens here. But you know, Daniel, is always fun to sit here and chat with you about the our crazy sport of mixed martial arts. Anything else you want to discuss before we get out of here, man?
Not much, man, other than I hope my Texas Rangers put things together because they have had a rough start to the season. But you know, I'm looking forward to doing this again next week, talking about a huge pay-per-view. You know, it's a big one whenever O'Malley's on the card. But yeah, looking forward to next week.
I like the fact they put him in the co-main event. I think that tells you a lot about what the UFC thinks of Sean O'Malley. By the way, I got one more buy sell before we get out of here. Buy or sell digital fans.
Sell 100%. I don't like it at all. It looks awful. I mean, the only thing I buy is whenever they showcase their ability to do it. I saw the couple of baseball things where they would take away the fans and show you how they put it on. That's the only thing I'm buying. I like the cardboard cutouts. The digital fans make me think I'm playing Madden.
No, you know what? Digital fans just seem to be like chugging beers. That you want to get me excited about digital fans? Have them just chugging beers.
Yeah. Make it interesting. Make it exciting. I love the funny ones, but basic digital fans, I'm selling those.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. But that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Of course, be sure to give us a follow on social media. I am at Jason_Floyd, and Daniel is at Daniel Galvan DGG. So that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Real Animals with Captain Mike Anderson Quick Fix on Radio Influence Tampa Bay.
Nutrition on the boat for the listeners. A lot of times you're fishing. It's a long day. It can be a hot day. You know, even in the wintertime, if you're splashing the boat in the morning, you know, you worked all week. You probably don't want to be out there for 2 hours. You want to be out there for 10 hours. So what are some things that people can eat to give them good energy, you know, throughout a whole day on the water?
Well, first you're going to have your opportunities to use protein shakes, and you can actually doctor them up in a couple of different ways to turn them into meal replacements. So instead of just the protein alone, you've got stuff that's called Carbo Plus, which is a carb powder, and now you've made that a complete meal. But I go to the extreme with mine because I'm always trying to get the most for everything that I'm going to do. So my approach to doing a protein shake is a little bit different because I'm going to put some egg whites in there. I'm going to put some sweet potatoes. Yes, I know that sounds like it's not going to taste good, but it'll surprise you. But what that does is that gives me a chance to put something in that source and not have to be feeling sluggish behind what I'm going to choose, but I also don't have to heat things up. And then the second part to that is if you think about it, a lot of times y'all are underwater, you don't want to eat nothing hot anyway. So a salad or some type of wrap, and I'm not talking about bread either, so we're going to take that off the table. You can wrap that in a head of, in a piece of lettuce, and you got a couple of nice opportunities to put nutritional value into the things that you're going to eat on the boat. But at the same time, if you're already on a program trying to control your weight, whether it's going up or down, you can put those quality things in as a replacement.
The Real Animals Podcast with Captain Mike Anderson can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RITampaBay.com.